This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Coming up, we've got all the news and views from Manchester City's week. It's your club, and this is your show.
Just a further 9 goals for Manchester City this week, taking the total for the season up to 98. 2 more for the century in all competitions this term, and while it won't be the fastest they've hit that landmark, they have been carrying on without a centre-forward in the team. Welcome to this week's Blue Moon Podcast, and a show where we're beginning to run out of ways to describe this side. But how about this? Despite the lack of a striker, is this the most complete squad Pep Guardiola has had at the Etihad? After all, he's made a raft of changes for the win against Norwich, and yet you wouldn't have known it. A perfect hat-trick for Raheem Sterling, a perfect performance in the Champions League at Lisbon, and a perfect way to prepare for the visit of Tottenham next Saturday. Seems like the perfect place to start this week's show. I'm David Mooney, and with me for this one is City fan Alan Phoenix-Bates.
Good afternoon.
And the Sun's Martin Blackburn.
Good afternoon, guys.
So let's start on it. Alan, I started there by suggesting that this is the most complete City squad. Is it, do you think?
It is... I was thinking about this, and it's the most complete, incomplete squad I can think of. There's stuff we're going to be talking about in a few minutes about, you know, what the things that people reckon we need, but it is we're watching a team that's remarkably close to perfect football and to total football, the Cruyff ideal, which of course Barcelona wanted to put on display, and indeed that was the whole point of getting the situation that we've got now at City, which was to do the same thing again, the Cruyff ideal. In fact, I was thinking only the other night that Bernardo's starting to remind me a bit of Johan in certain ways. His ability to be in the right place at the right time so often, you know. To me, we're looking like a total football team now. We're all over that. I mean, John Stones, he was flying forward last night. You'd expect that on the other side from defence. But Stones, he was having a right crack last night.
Yeah.
In between the first 2 goals.
The interesting thing with all of this, Martin, is that the whole no striker thing has been forgotten. Like you think of the discussions in kind of October, November time, it was always, is the lack of a striker going to cost City this season?
Just
not been mentioned for the last few months.
It's certainly gone off the radar, Dave. Yeah, I must say, Alan, I really like that, the most incomplete, complete side. I like the way of putting that. And you're absolutely right. You sort of look at it sometimes and think, oh, you know, they could do with a sort of natural left back, and they could do with a centre forward. But they're just sort of winning games so well at the moment. You know, I was in Lisbon, sat a long way back in the press box without any TV, you know, monitors to be able to look back at the replays, and we all came in at full time into the press room and thought, what an incredible performance. And then Pep sits there and says, like, well, you know, I'm not sure. We didn't say we didn't play well, but said we could do a lot better, you know, and it just leaves us all scratching our heads. But I think, you know, Dave, the striker thing will come into focus this weekend, won't it? Because as we all know, Harry Kane was the one that they wanted to sign. And they've done pretty well without him, really. In fact, you know, one of the guys that Pep said, you know, we will use as a centre forward when they didn't get Kane, Ferran Torres, is now consigned to the history books. So they've just found ways to win, and it's been fascinating to watch.
Yeah, I mean, Alan, this is so far away from that, what I think a lot of City fans deem the classic Guardiola City side, that 17-18 100 points team. But yeah, it kind of feels like this one is a better team than that.
I think so. I think it's. I mean, I think the wholesale changes that were made in between the Norwich drubbing and the Sporting drubbing really point to that. That is, you know, that's beyond strength in depth. It's almost taking the piss, to be honest. Yeah. Yeah. Tell you what, I'm not taking this game seriously, but we're going to beat you by a bigger margin than Norwich.
Yeah.
And this is the Champions League. It really did feel like the ultimate mind game to make that many changes, come in and absolutely drub your opposition. I mean, okay, Sporting have got a long way to go before they really can make an impact in the knockout stage of the Champions League. But and as we all know from City's travails over the years, that takes time. You can't just achieve it by snapping your fingers. But I think it's, you know, we shouldn't be winning by that sort of margin with a rejigged team.
Yeah.
In the Champions League. It's just, the other teams in the last 16 must be looking at us now and absolutely quaking.
Yeah, I just, while we're on the Champions League, let's look at that game first, because I mean, Martin, City are the quickest team to 200 Champions League goals. They've done it in 97 games. It's the elephant in the room is that they haven't won it yet, despite all of that kind of success with it. Does it feel like this could be the season?
What I've felt this season, really, Dave, is that, you know, they just feel like a more accomplished side in Europe, don't they? You know, Pep spoke quite a bit last season, sort of around the PSG semi-final. And I think perhaps before that against Dortmund, he talked about sort of coming through that sort of mental hurdle, if you like, of getting past the quarterfinals where they come unstuck before. And he said then that, you know, that it would benefit them going forward, you know, in future years, even if they didn't win it that year, which of course we know that they didn't. But, and I think that is sort of being borne out now, you know, they just look, yes, they lost in Paris in the group stage, but perhaps they were still building up a bit of a head of steam now. But, you know, they won 5-1 in Bruges, and then 5-0 in this game at Sporting Lisbon, and, you know, without any fuss at all. And it just feels to me like the coming of age, if you like, as a European side. And you know, this team, you know, I don't want to say they have to win it, but it feels like, you know, it would be a disappointment if they don't go on and win it, this set of players.
Yeah, Alan, have a listen to this. This is what Guardiola said after the game on Tuesday about kind of City's position in the Champions League.
Listen, we make almost a perfect Champions League last season. We played 13 or 14 games. I don't know how much it is. We won 12. We draw one. Already qualified here in Portugal against Oporto, and we played fantastic well, and we lost the final. It was, what the fucking failure is the team. And it's not true. We make a perfect Champions League. But in the Champions League final, we didn't perform as we normally use. And the margin Champions League is, like, you know, in this detail. So that's why I'm not going to hide behind the 0-5.
Please give us your backing. patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
Now, it's always funny when a manager drops in a swear like that, but yes. You kind of get the sense he's out to correct that final last season, don't you?
You really do. I mean, even to the point he was talking about before the game, of going back to basics, about making sure, first of all, you pass the players with the same T-shirt on. You said something of that ilk, didn't he? Which I thought was an amazing football tip. I must remember that one.
it's where we've all been going wrong all these years.
Well, if only I'd known years before. I could have been there. But I think there's a mental toughness. I mean, when you're going along a journey like this, the last hurdle is infinitely higher than the previous one in terms of the mental game you have to play with it. And none of that lot take defeat well. You think about that Amazon documentary that they did about the big season. And think about the way they were after defeats. And think about how that must have felt after the Champions League thing.
Yeah,
I think that there's a mental toughness that comes from being burnt, from being tempered in a fire, that I think is starting to show with this team now.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that, because, Martin, I was going to ask how ready this side is for those Champions League tough games. And I kind of guess it comes from the experience of having beaten PSG and Dortmund in the knockouts, but then getting burnt in the final, as Alan says.
Yeah, definitely. There'll be a sense of unfinished business, Dave. But you know, I think they will have that in their mind, and they want to make sure that it doesn't happen again, you know, if they can get that far. And really, you know, you've got to... You look at sort of Liverpool, you look at probably Bayern Munich, maybe PSG, but is there anything else in there to sort of worry City, really? You know, when it comes to the quarterfinal draw, you really would fancy them to go deep again. As I say, I feel like they're much more accomplished side than they have been in Europe now, with that bit of confidence of having got to a final. You know, last season, even though they ended up losing, I think perhaps once the dust had settled, they would have all got their heads together, Pep and Cheeky and Soriano, and thought, well, you know, we've overcome that hurdle, and now's the time to go one better. You know, I know that was the way that Caldoun was thinking. So yeah, definitely scope to sort of finish the job off in terms of that sort of missing trophy from everything that Pep's achieved.
Yeah, Alan, from a fan's point of view, does the experience of last season and the run that they went on last season help for this year? Because you think of the players in that situation, they're kind of professional and getting on with the job. And for us, it's kind of like we got all the way to the final and we look at it as now there's never been a better chance to win the Champions League than last season. They've got to go through it all again, you know, round after round to get to the final. Is it a mental hurdle for us as much as the players?
I think it is to a degree, but these mental hurdles seem to... They seem to get easier, you know, because we've seen where we can get, and we know that. I mean, I think the Tuchel bounce is over for a start. It's a well known statistical fact any competent manager can get a team to bounce for maybe 8 or 9 weeks before their actual talent makes a difference. And I think that Tuchel bounce is absolutely over now. I don't think that the Chelsea they feel like a spent force to me. There's a nerviness about Liverpool. I don't view them as a threat. I would have viewed them a few seasons ago.
God, that's brave talk.
You know, no, they feel to me like a team on the edge of a nervous breakdown all the time. They really do. And to my mind, I think that City can get through this. I don't think there's going to be, I don't see that there's any major obstacles to getting to a final again.
Yeah, well, we'll come back to that.
I did say we beat Lyon.
Yeah, I was gonna say you have history of not correctly predicting things in that sense. Yeah.
I'm on record as fucking this up totally. My first season as a busker meant that when I started busking, we went on that debilitating series of draws that lost us a Champions League place in 2010, if you remember.
Yeah, I don't know why we keep having you back,
previous,
to be honest.
Yeah. I've got previous. Why do you have me on? I don't know. You don't know. Yeah. Oh.
Oh, God. Martin, let's talk Raheem Sterling, because he was he's had a great week. As much as Bernardo tried to steal the headlines from him, you can't hide from it being Sterling's week, can you?
Definitely not. No, I mean I did hear people suggest that Sterling's goal was better than Bernardo. I don't know what you guys thought, but I thought Bernardo's was so eye catching. Really, the way it's sort of something about a goal that goes in off the underside of the bar, isn't there? That's sort of actually a bit special. But when it's funny how I was doing something for this morning's paper on Sterling moving into the top 10 of City's all-time leading goal scorers. And you just sort of look back to the way things were at the start of the season, and people were sort of wondering whether his City career was starting to sort of fizzle out a bit. And you just get the feeling that maybe because of that, then something, you know, quite special could be about to happen for Raheem Sterling, whether it's sort of, you know, scripted that this is going to be a really special season for him to move into the top 10, you know, in quite a sort of small time for him, really, is quite some effort by him. And yeah, just looks full of confidence right now. You know, 10 goals in the league with his hat-trick at Norwich, another one in midweek, and just feels like, you know, we're getting back to the Sterling of old, really, and hopefully that can continue. He seems to be, you know, he Pep's played him in all three of those positions across the front, hasn't he? And just looks hungry again. And the trick now for City is going to be able to persuade him that this is the place for him to stay for the long term.
Yeah, I was going to ask about the contract. Is there any news about it? Do you know anything?
I mean, really, Dave, it's. I mean, there's still not a huge development, but I think there is now more of a willingness for Sterling to renegotiate, you know, to sit down and talk again. I think City's stance hasn't really changed. They've always wanted for him to stay and be part of the next few years. Sterling's been a bit reluctant to do it just because, you know, he had those maybe 6 months either side of the summer where he wasn't getting in the team, and when he wasn't scoring goals. So those people sort of close to Raheem suggested that he wanted to wait to see whether he would get back in the team, get playing regularly again. And of course, now he is. So I would expect more talks to take place between now and the end of the season. Whether those come to the conclusion that most City fans will want, we'll have to wait and see.
Alan, I asked Adam Carter, Stat City, on Twitter about Sterling's numbers. I've asked his permission to do this. He sent me a voice note back. I'm gonna play this. Have a listen to this. Just where Sterling stacks up in the kind of Guardiola era of City.
In terms of hat tricks scored for the club, only Tommy Brawl's 8, Fred Tilson's 10, and Aguero's 16 hat tricks have scored more than Raheem's 6 for the club. So that just really shows you where he's at in terms of the all-time goal scorers for the club. And in fact, he moved into the top 10 all-time goal scorers this week. So I'd say he's arguably the most important goal scorer during the Pep Guardiola era. If you look at any conceivable metric under Pep, Raheem is easily in the top 2 alongside Aguero for most of them, almost most of them. You know, goals scored 116, second only to Aguero. Premier League goals scored 82, the joint highest with Aguero. Away Premier League goals, 39, 2 more than anyone else. Champions League goals, 21, just one shy of Aguero's tally. And 57 of Raheem's goals have either seen us take the lead or equalise, which means almost half his goals have secured the points for City in some way or another. But I guess you're still thinking about that missed chance at Burnley, aren't you?
Is that point from Adam there at the end exactly why he's underappreciated at City, do you think?
Yeah, I think that there are little things. I mean, I don't understand it. When there's a little bit of a lull in Raheem's form, the knives come out really, really quickly. And I can't work that one out. I can't work out why he's not given the space to breathe as a player. I mean, we were talking about him, you know, people talking about him being on the way out during the summer. Imagine if they say the same thing about Bernardo, weren't they, as well, during the summer?
Yeah.
And, you know, people, what he's doing right now, I mean, he's reverting to the mean of being a shit-hot player.
Yeah. I just wonder if part of the reason why he is undervalued, because I think he's undervalued at City. I think a lot of City fans don't appreciate what he offers to the team. And I wonder if it's because we still judge him by that 17-18 standard, that kind of role he played in the front three that was Sterling wide right, Sane wide left, and Aguero through the middle. And you think of him, you know, picking the ball up and running into that empty space and helping City on the break. Well, City don't do that anymore, and Sterling's job is completely different to what it was then. And because it's not as eye catching as it used to be, I wonder if that's part of the reason.
Yeah, I think sometimes it takes a fan base a while to actually catch up with the football that's being played, you know, and the tactics that are required. We're all about creating space, creating negative space as well. We have got defenders covering the wrong areas. It's a much more subtle game of football. It won't necessarily bear out in figures, but when you look at the figures that we were given just now in that audio, the figures are there anyway.
Yeah.
It's just a different job. It's not so obvious, but he's doing it week in, week out.
Yeah. Martin, when you think of the influence he has on this City side, I mean, when you think back to the start of the season and certainly end of last season when he wasn't getting in the team, I think there'd have been a lot of supporters who would have gone, well, you know what, if they get a good offer, I'd be quite happy to take it at this stage. I'm not convinced there is a good offer for Sterling anymore.
No. Just to backtrack slightly, Dave. I was there that day at Burnley. It was a bad miss, that, you know. was that 17-18?
It was, remember. Yeah. It was actually. Yeah.
It was. It finished 1-1, didn't it? Burnley got a late equaliser, but yeah. I mean, he's been, I think he sort of carried the can, if you like. Do you remember the Derby defeat against United in March? I'm sure you guys do remember it.
Yeah.
And Sterling had a particularly bad day. Pep seemed very angry with him, and then he sort of disappeared from the team for a little while, didn't he? You know, I don't think he was even in the squad at Fulham. So and it seemed to sort of go from there, really. Although he had a great start to the Euros with England, he came back to City and wasn't back in the reckoning. You know, the stats that that Stat City read out there are incredible. But I think there was a period there in either side of the summer where he had something like two goals in 30 appearances or something like that. It was quite a drought by his standards. And then, of course, when Jack Grealish came in, a lot of people would have looked at it and said, well, you know, you don't pay that sort of money for a player like that and not play him. So potentially is his position the same one as Raheem Sterling? So yeah, there was a lot of doubts, but he's, you know, once again, he's proved them wrong. And I guess you're at the point now where Grealish is probably going, when he's fit again, which I gather won't be too long, but he's going to be the one who has to force his way back in, such is the sort of form of the last few games.
Yeah, well, while we're on Sterling, he became the third City player to score a perfect hat-trick in the Premier League on Saturday. It's the fourth perfect hat-trick that City have scored in the top flight in the modern era. So we sent Sam Roscoe digging into the archives to look back at how all four of them were scored.
I don't want half-hearted love affairs.
Manchester City's first ever Premier League hat-trick was scored by Paolo Wanchope against Sunderland at Main Road in the year 2000. Other players have since netted three times in a game, but the first to do it with his left foot, right foot and head came in 2011. It was Edin Dzeko at Tottenham.
I think last time I scored four goals was in Germany. We play a cup with, I don't know, third league or something like that, but today is something special for me because to score four goals in the Premiership is fantastic.
In that game, the Bosnian's first three goals fulfilled the perfect hat-trick criteria. The striker was still new to the club, having joined in the previous January. He says he was beginning to find his feet.
I had always a lot of confidence in me. I wasn't fit 100% from the beginning when I just came in January. And now I feel much better. I feel stronger and we'll see. I want to improve every next game.
It took more than 4 years for City's next perfect hat-trick, and it came from Sergio Aguero. Of course, who else? As the side ran riot over Newcastle. It finished 6-1 at the beginning of what would turn out to be Manuel Pellegrini's final season.
Very happy because me as a manager, I like to see teams play in this way. And not just score one goal or when we score the second goal, go back and just try to keep the advantage. I think that I am a fan of the fans. So I think that for the fans it's very important to see teams playing in this way, scoring and enjoying the whole game.
Newcastle had taken the lead that afternoon before Aguero equalised with a diving header. After the break, he made it 2-1 with a deflected effort off his left foot before his right foot dink made it 3. He then scored twice more to equal the Premier League record of 5 goals in a single game. Nobody has ever scored 6. Pellegrini was delighted with his display.
Kun is different. We know that Kun is different. Maybe in the other game he was having a lot of chances, but for different reasons he was not scoring. I think that today he returns again to his normal amount of chances that he create that game, and in this case he scored.
The manager subbed the striker off shortly after his 5th goal, and fans were disappointed Aguero didn't get the chance to score the Premier League's first ever double hat-trick. However, Pellegrini confirmed that he wasn't fully fit.
He was not upset because he has an important kick from Wednesday on Germany. He was having treatment in the half-time, so I think that was the risk for him to finish the whole game. That's why I took him out.
It was the same player in the same fixture 3 years later that scored City's next perfect hat-trick in the 3-1 win over Newcastle in January 2019. Aguero opened the scoring with a header. His right-footed penalty made it 2-0, and then, after Newcastle pulled a goal back, his left-footed finish secured the point. But even Aguero wasn't sure if he touched the ball for the first goal.
I don't know the first goal touch, but I feel a little, yeah.
That was the next question. So how much of a touch? It looked like it brushed your hair. We're not sure. The Premier League is saying that it is your goal.
Yeah.
It's up to you, I think.
Of course. It's mine. Definitely. Sure. 100%.
This was in Pep Guardiola's second season at City. And the manager was delighted with Aguero's display.
Sergio had his talent. Before the first goal, he didn't touch the ball, the first touch goal. So is a special gift, and no words to describe how good it is in that position. After that, the goal, he contact the ball, was aggressive, one against one, two against one, three against one. He proves. Because we need the guy who scores goals. So happy for him.
And now, 4 years later, Raheem Sterling has joined the club of City players who have scored perfect hat-tricks in the Premier League. His triple against Norwich was the first time it's been done by a player not wearing the number 10 shirt. And it was perhaps a little fortuitous, since his left-footed goal was a rebound after he missed a penalty. Even so, Guardiola was heaping praise on the forward after the game.
He made a brilliant first goal, the second one was there. And he was so, after the goal, you realise how grew up, he's confident and being aggressive. Last game, he made an excellent action against Brentford, we won a penalty. So he's a guy who always creates something.
Sterling, though, wanted to focus more on the team's performance.
I think the team played an incredible game. With a quick turnaround, it's always difficult, and that's what makes the team so good. It's every 3 days we're at it again. The thing that impressed me about the team is the mentality, is that winning mentality to as I said, go in the weekend and hopefully do it midweek. And I think that's the most, I'd say, incredible thing about the team. It's always good when your forward players score goals, and that's what you need. Red's been in incredible form, Kevin, Phil, a lot of the boys. So the more players we have scoring, I think, the more it would benefit us. So long may that continue, man.
That's now four perfect hat-tricks scored by City players in the Premier League. Fans never care how the ball hits the net, as long as it does. But it's nice to mark those little milestones like this from time to time. Baby, I'm perfect. Baby, I'm
perfect. So let's try right now. Hello, my name is Gerard Weekens, former player of Manchester City, and you're listening to the Blue Moon Podcast.
You see stats pop up all the time about clubs and players, and you want to know that exact thing about City. There's an answer. Statcity.co.uk. Want to find out all of the players who played alongside club legends like David Silva, Sergio Aguero or Vincent Kompany? Or maybe you'd like to know which team found it hardest to score past Joe Hart. You can find out City's record in every competition, at every stadium, and under every manager. Just go to statcity.co.uk and browse away. That's statcity.co.uk.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Blue Moon Podcast.
That was Sam Roscoe looking at City's perfect hat-tricks in the Premier League. Time to have a look ahead to the game with Tottenham now. Alan, it feels like the first time in ages that Liverpool play first this time. It's Norwich at Anfield for them, which means that City are likely to be, in inverted commas, only 6 points ahead at kickoff. Does that change anything?
I don't know that it does, to be honest. And that's likely to be only 6 points ahead at kickoff as well. I mean, stranger things have happened.
Not many spring to mind.
No, not many spring to mind, but stranger things have happened. But, I mean, the point is, it's still 6 points. 6 points is 6 points. As my dad always used to say to me, I'd rather have the points, boy.
Yeah.
Every time.
Yeah. Martin, it is a tough game for City at weekend, and maybe less so for Liverpool. How do you see the picture at the minute?
Yeah, well, I was actually at Burnley on Sunday, Dave, when they played Liverpool, and Liverpool were quite lucky really to sort of come out with that with the 3 points. It was a horrendous day. It was the sort of day when if you've got any chance of winning the title, you've just got to get the job done. That's what they did, and I didn't see all of the game in Milan last night, but from what I did see, they didn't play brilliantly, but still won. I think Pep described them to an American station on Tuesday night. They described Liverpool as a pain in the ass, I think he said the word. and that's sort of what they're being at the moment. They're not playing great. Like Alan said, you would expect them to beat Norwich, but you wouldn't be absolutely certain. So you would imagine it'll be down to six, then City play again, and then Liverpool play Leeds on Tuesday night, I think, or is it Wednesday night? So things are going to even up slightly in terms of the games played coming up. I mean, 6 points as Alan said, it's still a really good lead when you consider, you know, that how the season started. And yes, they've got to still come to the Etihad, but you know what I always say is that City have played pretty much all of their difficult games, haven't they? Or their most difficult games, they've got them out of the way. And of the big teams that they've still got to play, most of them are at the Etihad, where you always feel more confident. So, You know, even if it goes down to six, I still think they're happy enough with that, City, really.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it, Alan? I mean, somebody said to me the other week that it's not over, but you'd rather have the cards that City have got.
Yeah. I mean, I was looking at the, I was having a quick look at the running, and to be honest, there wasn't an awful lot that concerned me. You know, there weren't that many upcoming games that really made me think, oh, I don't fancy that. You know,
dangerous that, isn't it?
It is dangerous, but that, I mean, I think about that compared with say how I felt about things in say 1991. Yeah. My God, that's a change. It really is. I look at the entire fixture thing and go, I don't fancy that first division. I really don't. Oh. There's difficult games all the way down the line. These days, I'm thinking, you know, they're asked to lose, if anything. You know, We'd have to throw some of them away.
Yeah, I'm interested, Martin. Like at the moment, the defence sort of picks itself. It's a bit of a question mark of the three centre backs who Pep will start with. But after that, it feels like the list of players that deserve to play at the moment. It feels like you've got to include Rodri, you've got to include Bernardo, Gundogan, De Bruyne, Sterling, Mahrez, Foden. Yet there's not enough room for all of these players. So like
there isn't.
How do you do it?
Well, I think it's a really interesting thing. He talked about it a little bit in midweek, didn't he? About the sort of the way that the squad is sort of made up, and the fact what was the word he used? I can't remember what it was now. The word he used to describe the way it'll come to me in a minute, I'm sure. Harmony. It was the harmony of the squad, wasn't it? And I think that's key to it. When you've got all these players, these sort of big name superstar players, you know, and they're getting left out every now and again. They have to sit on the bench. That isn't for everybody, you know. There are players who want to play in every single game. But one of the great things about this sort of era of Pep really has been that he seems to have got this squad where, you know, players just accept that occasionally they're going to have to sit one out, and I think that's what he's done really well, you know. So I suppose he's perhaps been lucky in that there's been little injuries or you know, illnesses or absences. Mahrez going off to the AFCON and Grealish picking up this injury, which has made it slightly easier. But he's always said, you know, he has to have this squad if he's gonna go for all the trophies, and that seems to have worked really well for him. You know, I think that's one of the great things is that he's kept this squad together and he's kept them happy. And you know, you don't really get players very often wanting to leave City with a non-exception, you know, Torres and Leroy Sané, but people want to stick around, don't they?
Yeah. I want to talk about Bernardo, Alan, because we didn't really talk about him despite what he's done this week. It feels like he's had a quiet few weeks after Christmas, but he's kind of slowly coming back onto the radar, isn't he, for this season?
Mm. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, it was like I say, with me, is that ability to be in the right place at the right time that is really impressing me with him. I mean, his ball skills are absolutely superb. That first goal. The ball was moving in completely the wrong direction for him to be able to do that with it. I do not know how he did it. But also, you have to be there at the right place as well. And I think he's had a quiet revolution in the way that he plays in terms of his ability to play, put himself in the right place.
Yeah, he's not the right size either for someone to hit a strike like that first one.
No,
I don't understand how he does it because every time you watch him chest the ball down, the ball looks as big as his body.
Absolutely, it's just, he is the tiniest man, isn't he? But he's just got this ability to slot himself into the right place, much like David Silva had.
Yeah.
Of being able to read the game, be in the right place at the right time. But there's a difference to his game because Bernardo can actually shoot.
It's an interesting point, really, the fact that, you know, since David Silva left, I wouldn't say he hasn't been missed, because I know how much City fans loved him, but he's sort of slotted into that, fill those boots, albeit quite small boots, aren't they? But
tiny Elfin boots.
I remember once I did a stadium tour at City. It was like the press launch of the stadium tour, and Jesus Navas's boots were on there, and they were size 4.5. I was like how is that possible?
Bloody way!
How is that possible that a professional footballer can have such small feet? Surely that hurts to kick the ball, doesn't it? Martin, I want to play this. This was Guardiola on Tuesday night, again, talking about Bernardo. This is what he said.
Always I tell him, so, Bernardo, you're a perfect player. Defensively, so intuitive. Can run 12, 30 kilometres, but in sense, not just run for run. And with the ball, is more than exceptional. But always say, you have to score goals. You have to win games. You have to have the ability to do it. Today, the goal, he scored one of the best I've ever seen. For the technique, for everything.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. But don't worry, it'll be over soon.
So that was Guardiola on Tuesday night talking about Bernardo's first goal. How has he become so important to City, Martin, this season?
We touched on it earlier on, didn't we, Dave, about how close he came to leaving in the summer. People talked about Sterling as well, of course, but there was obviously Bernardo was keen to move closer to home, wasn't he? So you look back now and you sort of think, would City fans, you guys know better than me, would City fans have been devastated had he gone in the summer? I think they would have been disappointed and everything. But, you know, if there was talk of him going this summer, 12 months on, then you really would be devastated, wouldn't you? He's had such an incredible season. He's got to be in line for me for the awards, for the Player of the Season awards, really. And, you know, they've just found this sort of nice role for him in that midfield. And, stepped, if there was a shadow a little bit with David Silva, he seems to have sort of stepped out of it and really taken his game on. There was a quote from him after the game in midweek where he said, "We collectively, the City squad have moved up a level since last season." And I think you know, many people would say that about himself. Really, you know, he's had a really outstanding time. I always look back to, you know, his first season was quite underwhelming, and then the second one, I think De Bruyne was injured, wasn't he? Was it 18, 19? Possibly, yeah. When De Bruyne missed a lot of it, and he really sort of stepped up then, you know. So he's had a strange City career, really, in that he hasn't always been brilliant, but when he is brilliant, my goodness, he's fantastic, isn't he?
Yeah, and while we're talking about being in good form, Alan, City themselves in imperious form right now. Spurs, on the other hand, seems to be struggling a little bit. They've had three Premier League defeats in a row, one win in the last four in all competitions. This, I mean, it points to only one result on Saturday, doesn't it?
It does. The form book does point us in that direction. As long as we don't have one of those weird listless games where we can't seem to, you know, pass the ball to somebody wearing the same T-shirt. we have those occasionally. Sometimes it can be, you know, after the Lord Mayor's show, so to speak. And we can sometimes look a little bit on the listless side, but again, like I said, a lot of our fixtures that they're ours to lose a lot of the time, and I just hope we don't. I hope that there's going to be a positive response to a team that are struggling. But mind you, they would probably have said that we would have beaten Spurs in the fixture at the beginning of the season as well, wouldn't they?
Yeah. I mean, that's the interesting thing, Martin. I think that the start of the season, City were, they were obviously undercooked from the Euros. It's an entirely different game at the moment. Where do you think Spurs are right now? Because Conte doesn't seem to be particularly happy, does he?
No, he doesn't. No, I think it's three straight defeats in the league. Certainly two at home, and they're doing their best to ensure that United get into the top four, aren't they, Spurs? Through their own poor form, really. So it probably is a good time to play them. I sort of feel like they're one of those sides who, if they really clicked, if they really hit the straps, then they could cause City a problem. But traditionally, you know, in recent years, you know, City have done quite well against them, haven't they? At home, certainly. I remember a 2-2 draw early in the season a couple of years ago at the Etihad, but generally they've beaten them and beaten them quite well, and that's what I that's what I would expect to see again. So I mean, it'll be an interesting day for Harry Kane, though, won't it? To finally step out at the Etihad.
That's the thing. Do you sense for City the Harry Kane ship has sailed now?
Well, yes, I think it is. I mean, I think it has rather. I think that if it was up to Harry Kane, I still think he would like to come. But I think, you know, you look at it, and in the summer, at the end of July, he's going to be 29. So the only way I could see it being back, you know, on the horizon, if you like, is if, you know, if Spurs were willing to take a good deal less than what they were asking for last summer. You know, I think it was it was the news section of my paper did the story that seemed to cause such a stir that you know, he could go if City paid 160 million for him. You know, that was, for all the stick that that story got, it was extremely well sourced, you know, and 160 million, there was no way City were ever going to pay that. And, you know, would they now take half of that, you know, would they? I'm not too sure. I still think, you know, Pep talked about what a difficult negotiator Daniel Levy is, and everybody in football knows that. So I suspect that they, like you said, Dave, that ship has sailed.
Yeah, two sides probably never going to meet on that one.
I don't think so.
Yeah, Alan, we've said on podcasts recently that Guardiola will be happy with a busy schedule for rhythm for City players. Does that make this game a little easier in that sense? They can just use the momentum that they've gathered this week from a 4-0 and a 5-0 win.
Well, yeah, and also it gives a chance for... we've had plenty of squad rotation between the 4-0 and the 5-0. So there'll be players that'll be wanting to get in there and wanting to prove a point, who were out of the Champions League team on Tuesday night. So, you know, there's momentum in all sorts of areas. There's a momentum for the whole squad. It's not just for the team core, but there'll be players wanting to get in there and prove a point on the weekend.
Yeah, it's then a week off though until Everton, Martin. It's been a really weird kind of start to 2022 for City in that sense, that they just haven't had the run of games that they normally get.
No, well, of course, we, as we know, they're always in the semi-final of the Carabao, aren't they?
Yeah.
So there's usually a very busy start to the week to the year tagged onto a very busy Christmas. And I think Pep almost didn't know what to do with himself, really, in January. I think he did say he prefers it. You know, he's funny, really, because he'll have a little grumble about the intensity of, you know, the number of matches that we have to play in this country. But he's quite open about the fact that he likes it when it's sort of Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday, you know, and he can really get up this, get this rhythm going. And also that helps him because the squad that he's assembled, he can keep everybody a little bit happier when he's got games coming thick and fast. So a week off, back to the training ground, maybe give the players a couple of days off. It looks quite a nice run, really, through till the international break. Now you'd expect them to go to Peterborough and win. Of course, they can play the kids against the second leg against Sporting Lisbon. So and like Alan said, the run of games that they've got doesn't look too bad. You know, Tottenham, Everton, United. You would like to think that all three of those they could go and win, even though they've, you know, maybe had problems with them before.
Yeah, I've just got this lovely image of Guardiola sat at home crawling the walls, not knowing what to do with himself.
Yeah,
flicking through the television, going, "There's nothing on."
Exactly, it would do.
Yeah, right. We're so close to making it our best ever season on the charity bet already. We've had another winner on last week's show. This one was Simon Bykowski with the correct 4-0 prediction for City at Norwich. That brought the total for the season up to £1,230. We're raising money for the Man City Fans Food Bank support. They're collecting donations for the Trussell Trust in Manchester. They'll be collecting under the bridge from Asda outside the Etihad 2 hours before kickoff on Saturday as well, all being well. Do check with them though, because obviously there's a couple of weather warnings in place, so they might not be there if weather conditions are bad, so do have a check on the day. But if they are there, go and pay them a visit if you can. William Hill is giving each of us a £10 correct score single on City's games. Let's get some predictions on the board. Martin, I'm going to start with you for City against Spurs. What are you going for?
So I'm going to go for 3-0 to City. I just think that, you know, I expect them to score goals. They're in this rich vein of form, and Tottenham are out of sorts. So I think it'll be a comfortable win, 3-0.
3-0 is 7-1 and £70 if you're right. Alan, what are you having?
I'm not too dissimilar to Martin. I'm going for the same sort of thing, but tempered with a little bit of caution, 3-1.
3-1 is the score that we win with most often on the charity bet. So yeah, we could. you never know, dear. 11-1 if you're right on that one. £110. I've gone for 4-0 because I was going to go for 3-1 until Alan said that. that's 12-1 and £120 if you're right, Martin. I've got to say to you as well, people who. We have a history as well of people making their debut on the podcast and winning the charity bet. So, so no pressure.
Tough act to follow then, Dave. Yeah. Tough act to follow. Fingers crossed.
Remember, you've got to be 18 or over to gamble. Prices can change. And for more on responsible gambling, have a look at begambleaware.org. Now then, we've had a lot of focus on some of the EDS players lately. Liam Delap and James McAtee have been making an impact in the first team in recent weeks. It's time to check in with our EDS expert, Sean Blinkhorn, to get more of a view of how the players we don't see too much of are progressing.
Well, I wanted to talk a little about a few players this month. I wanted to start with Josh Adam. It might be a couple of years ago now, I came on the podcast and I spoke a little about the lesser spotted Scottish signings that we were making at the moment, and just tying into where the Scottish game is at the moment, and it seems to kind of be a bit on the up. Now, Josh Adam, we got from Celtic, so he's Glasgow born. He's to describe him, if you haven't seen him yet, he is a right-footed James McAtee. It is as simple as that. It's uncanny, to be honest. I'd love to see the two of them together in the centre of the park, but I think it'd go very, very wrong.
Does he look about 14 as well?
Yes, he does. Yeah,
excellent.
To the point, I've got in my notes recently, one of the most recent games I watched. I'd watched a couple of under 18 games, and then I watched an under 23 game, and I've got Tipex in my book because I just wrote Josh Adam, and it was McAtee. They're identical, but you know, a mirror image.
Yeah, who's let these children into this? Yeah.
so the one thing about him is, you know, if you can imagine McAtee at the moment, so you imagine a lad who spins on the ball and he glides to the box with, you know, great strides, and then as he gets towards the box, it becomes lots of small touches, and he's looking around. He's going to either play a beautiful little through ball or smack one in. It's identical. So he's still playing under 18s football in his second year, which is probably a down to that, really. I mean, you don't really need two James McAtees, do you? So it's probably down to that. It's not a great sign for a player you've actually got hopes for in the hole, but it isn't the death knell either, because Cole Palmer was still playing under 18s football in his second year. So
look where he is now. Yeah.
And look where he is. Yes. So a classy little player who I think is one to watch when he starts to. When he starts to show a bit more for the higher age levels, but a great little player.
Yeah, and I mean, another name that I know you've mentioned to me privately is Isaac Smith. What about him?
Yeah, so Isaac, he is a scholar. So this is his first year, so he is still playing under 18s football. He's a centre back who I think would probably be playing higher if it wasn't for, like, you know, the wealth of centre-backs that we've got slightly higher than under 18. So, I mean, I'm slightly disappointed in Luke Mbeti so far this season. Apart from, you know, making his first team bow, which is excellent. Apart from that, he's been a bit off, I'd say, but he's got the second half of the season to turn that around.
Yeah.
And Finlay Burns has moved on. Moved on on loan. So maybe there is going to be a chance for Isaac. As you'd expect, he's relatively good on the ball, but he's also a strong tackler who absolutely loves dribbling the ball out of defence. not doing that, like, crescent pass along the back line that most of our centre backs that we create these days, and, you know, it goes out to the wings. Oh no, he takes the ball and runs with it, which is good to see. He's put on some really commanding performances from what I've seen so far for the under 18s. So I'm really looking forward to seeing him step up to the under 23s and see if he can bully the older lads much the same.
Yeah, just a quick question on the centre backs though, because you look at let's take, like, first team down, and obviously you look at where City are with the first team. You've got Stones, Laporte, Diaz as your top three, and then Ake not far behind them as your fourth one. Mm-hmm. When you say, like, you're disappointed a little bit in Luke Mbeti's development this season, like the opportunity, he must know the opportunities for the first team aren't really there, because like when is there going to be an opportunity when City have got four top quality centre backs like that? So then when you look even further down behind that, I almost wonder if it's a little bit dispiriting for someone like Isaac Smith.
Yeah, quite possibly. I mean, this is probably personal bias, I don't know. But if you're Luke Mbeity, for me, you've got to see Nathan Ake as gettable. And the other thing I should say as well, that Luke Mbeity spent the second half of last year injured. So, you know, he's trying to find his way back in.
Yeah.
I see what you mean. And there's lots of, even in between, say, Luke Mbeity and Isaac Smith and the first team, you've then got Taylor Harwood-Bellis and, again, Finn Burns. So there's competition there as well as, and there'll be even more competition behind someone like Jade Okotongo, who's, I think he's either slightly younger or about the same age as Isaac. There's all sorts of competition at the minute. You struggle to see where the chances come, don't you? Yeah. But I mean, that Wickham game came out of nowhere, so
you never know, do you? Peterborough's on the horizon.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So who knows?
Yeah. A quick point on the Premier League under 18 rules. I don't really understand what's changed, but something has changed, hasn't it?
Yeah. As I was writing notes to come on this week, just something stuck out to me. I mean, that you cannot, after Brexit, we can't sign under 18 players from the EU anymore. Now, that hasn't seen much success in terms of first team transitions thus far, other than, you know, we might not see another Eric Garcia, which is a shame, isn't it?
I was going to say that. I'm not sure there'll be a huge number of fans crying over that.
But at the same time, you know, Romeo Lavia will pretty much be the last signing of that nature, which is a shame, because it's, you know, his sheer quality. He looks the part, Lavia. But at the same time, maybe somebody like David Brooks wouldn't fall through the cracks, and he'll continue to get the best possible coaching, and may well be an asset of the, you know, that type of player as well. So we're going to see a greater spread of UK trained talent. The signings this year that we've made at scholarship level, some players like Thomas Galvez from Watford and George Murray Jones, the keeper from Southend, signings that we've always made will now have to be pretty much all UK based as well.
Yeah.
But then even a greater spread of even like the talent that signs at a younger age from, you know, that are scouted on the fields up and down the country, just in this group, Isaac Smith, he's actually a Scouser, Isaac Smith. Like you say, there's another one in that same group as well from Liverpool, and there's one from like St. Helens, and to go along with the usual crop of players from Manchester and London.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like I say, we've always done these deals, but it might now have to go into overdrive in terms of UK-based talent and hopefully retention from the younger academy in terms of local lads as well.
Yeah, and I know the loan rules are changing soon as well, so there might not be as many opportunities for players to go out on loan. So that's something to keep an eye on, I guess. Let's finish, Sean, with a little bit on Rico Lewis. You've mentioned him in the past. I'm gathering that you're quite excited about him.
Yeah, this is the player I wanted to come on to talk about in reality this week. I've mentioned him before, but it was kind of only initial impressions that I had of him. So he's a scholar again. So I think he turned 17 a month or two ago. But he's playing at all levels. He was playing at the under-19 UEFA Youth League thing that we crashed out of pathetically, as usual. he was playing at that level, and he's played here, there, and everywhere. So if I was to say that he's a right-back that can also play in central midfield, I'm not setting any pulses racing there. I mean, it's the type of player that we might have seen a million times before go on to nothing. But Rico, to me, is a little different. Rico is very adept at the dual fullback / attacking midfielder role on both sides, so left back and right back.
Kind of what Cancelo invented last season.
Quite like what Cancelo does, yes. So more than CJ Egan Riley played a more kind of right back / defensive midfield role in that Wickham game, which is what we've seen more type of player of recently. Rico is a bit more versatile, a bit more dynamic. He is a player who is incredibly agile, pretty quick. He gets into advanced positions. He is, despite his small stature, he's quite strong as well. He, one of the most recent game that I saw him do this, play this role. So like I say, he started at left back, but Luke Mbeity drifted over on the ball when City were on the ball, and Rico Lewis was actually the most advanced of all the three.
Yeah,
the three midfielders, narrower than Mbeity, but still ahead of Kean Breckin and Romeo Lavia, which is, and he will trouble the scorers as well. He'll use that agility to either cut into the midfield and play a pass, or he'll take a shot on himself. He scored a goal in, I think he was in the youth league, where he just span ridiculously in the box and placed it in the corner. I just think he's an incredible player. I really like play. I've heard this phrase around the academy a couple of times, and then I think I heard Jonathan Smith say it recently about players showing their personality on the pitch. And the more that I hear that, the more it started to click for me that it's those type of players that you notice more on the pitch, yeah, that you start to think, oh, there might be something here. And then when they do it consistently, and Rico is one of them players, he shows a lot to me on a lot of occasions. And he's versatile, so he'll be all over the pitch and he'll be scoring goals, he'll be setting it up, he'll be putting strong tackles in. I think he's just a fantastic player. I've seen a lot from him recently. I think it was only about a month ago for the first time I saw his face cropping up in the first team training picture as well. So I'm hoping that that Pep feels the same, that we've got a good little player there for the future, hopefully.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast, facebook.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
That was Sean Blinkhorn talking to me about some of the EDS players. We're going to finish with some listener questions. Get them in for next week on Twitter at Blue Moon Podcast. You can email us through the website as well. There's a little form on there. Just go to bluemoonpodcast.com, fill it out, send it in. First up is the Bertie Full South on Twitter, who has said, how do you stop City becoming complacent in the run-up to any Champions League final like they were last year? I guess this all comes down to rhythm, Martin.
A little bit, Dave, yeah. I mean, I think that, we knew for quite a while last season, didn't we, that City were going to win the title. I know it wasn't until a couple of games before the end that it was absolutely certain, but I don't think anybody really expected United to catch them last season. So, and of course, they were out of the FA Cup, so I think that they perhaps just, lost their rhythm a little bit before that and enter the season. So, I think it might be different this season. It looks like Liverpool are going to run City a bit closer for the title. I think Pep, having only won the FA Cup once, perhaps, I think he'll want to go deep into that one as well. So, I do expect him to go very close to winning all three, really. So, hopefully that won't be as much of an issue this time.
Yeah, Alan, I wonder if the situation as it was last season, the fact that the league wasn't as competitive as maybe it could be this season, actually hindered City in the big games at times because they didn't have that pressure week in, week out.
I don't know. It's difficult. It's difficult to surmise this from the outside. I mean, I'm a little bit. I think complacent is strong. Is a bit of a strong adjective to use in such a situation. I don't think any team comes into. I don't think any professional club comes into a situation like that with complacency. But I think, I see where you're coming from. I think there could be, being run a little bit closer this time round could give a little bit more urgency to the situation than before, a little bit of mental sharpness. Although I would say, if you want to stop City becoming complacent, tell the teams that if they don't win the Champions League this year, we return to the busking. On the 2009-2010 business model, which means you'll have me outside with a banjolele singing absolute nonsense at them for the next season.
Nobody wants that shit. I'll chuck a few quid in if it means we don't have to, Alan. Is that all right?
I was just going to say, actually, as well, guys, do you remember, on the sort of complacency thing, do you remember Aguero's penalty against Chelsea when he went for the Peninka, didn't he? And he just chipped it to the keeper. So, that wasn't complacency, I'm not sure.
Well, maybe. I mean, certainly the only penalty that I can remember that was followed up with an apology.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
At least he got it on target, though. That's not he always did, a given with City these days.
It went down as a shot on target.
Not always a given. We're going to finish with Simon P on the emails, who got in touch to say, I just wanted to pick up on something David said recently about not being bothered if City don't sign a striker this summer, and say that I fully agree. I would worry that even bringing in someone who is undoubtedly world class like Kane or Haaland would upset the balance that we've worked so hard to create over the last two seasons. Could this mean that City won't end up going all guns blazing to sign a forward this summer? Martin, I guess out of the three of us, you're in the best position to be able to kind of surmise what City are thinking.
Yes, well, I still think they will try and sign a new forward, Dave, and I think they'd be willing to spend big money on a striker. You know, of course, we shouldn't forget that they've already signed one in Julian Alvarez, who you know, the reports that you see about him are first class. You know, I think there's some footage of Aguero watching him score a hat trick, isn't there? So, and of course, you know, all City fans would love to see Liam Delap come through and do well. But no, I think that Pep would love to have the option of a target man just to you know, just for the games that are close. And I think they will. I think they will try and sign Erling Haaland. That's my view on it. Real Madrid, I want to sign him too. So my last pound says he might go to Real Madrid if they come up with a right offer. But yeah, I think there's still a strong chance he comes to City as well. So I take the point about do they actually need one? They are lovely to watch at the moment, but I don't know if you want to go in another season without a recognised centre forward.
Well, this was going to be my question, Alan, because it could be Guardiola's final season. The idea that you go into it not giving him all the tools that you want to win as much as he could possibly want, surely they have to go out and get somebody this summer, don't they?
There are two, I suppose, I have competing views on this. Number one, it certainly is not broken at the moment. But on the other hand, you have to move forward all the time. We've had seasons where we've had precious little going on in the transfer market sometimes, and in the past we've suffered for it. So one has, you know, it's like an animal eating all before it. One has to keep on moving like a pike, for those of us who read our Ted Hughes poems.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, people don't misunderstand the fundamental role of City in the transfer market, which is to attract silly money and then entice other clubs into being even sillier to outdo us, and so breaking them in the process. It's a little bit like some of the tactics during the Cold War of making the USSR spend, and then watch them go completely down the tubes in the end. I get the feeling that's what we've done to Barcelona, isn't it?
Yeah, I didn't think we were going to finish this week's show with a little bit on USSR, US politics, but here we are.
geopolitics of the 1980s. There you go. That's what people come to me for.
Yeah, I wasn't sure that's where we were going. Martin, final question.
Yes.
If you were to, you said earlier on about your final pound would go on Haaland going to Real Madrid. What if you were to put a number on it, kind of percentage wise? What would you say for where City are at and chances of getting Haaland or someone like Haaland right now?
I think that, you know, there's a lot of things going for it, Dave. You know, there's the fact that his dad has such a nice sort of affiliation with City. I think he would like his lad to go and sort of follow in his footsteps, if you like, and go and play there. I think if he does come to England, City is the club that he'll go to. The slight worries about it all really are the involvement of the agent and the sort of wages and the agent's fees that are going to be involved in it. So although that £64 million looks a brilliant deal compared to Tottenham asking £160 million for Harry Kane, it looks an outstanding deal. You know, there would be a lot more to it than that. So it starts to become the point where you're not sure if it's a City type of deal, if there's all those sorts of extras, and do they sort of smash the wage structure to get him? So I would probably put it at about, I think they've probably got about a 6 out of 10 chance of getting him, really.
Yeah.
I think there's a chance and a good chance, but it's just so hard to know how it plays out really at the moment. So I don't know. I'm very interested to see how it works, and I would really like to see him there. You know, I would. I think it'd be an amazing signing, and it's sort of, as I say, his dad's history with the club, and that it seems so perfect in lots of ways, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, it's one that we will undoubtedly come back to later on in the season. But for now, that's it for today's Blue Moon podcast. Thank you very much for listening, and please don't forget to give it a rating and a review where you can. Thanks also to my guests for today's show, Alan Phoenix-Bates.
More than welcome.
And Martin Blackburn.
Pleasure, Dave.
If you'd like to support the show on Patreon, you'll get this podcast every week completely ad-free, and you also get a bonus show every Monday. We've got several new formats of bonus shows we've been doing this season. Last Monday was an episode of The Games That Made Me featuring Stephen McInerney. Here is a short clip.
It's quite simply possibly the most electric the Etihad's ever been. I mean, there's probably been some occasions in more recent history as well, but just goosebumps. Goosebumps from the first minute to the last. I was convinced we were going to go get into the semis, you know, and go far. And I reckon the atmosphere made me convinced we were going to win the whole competition. And do you remember the Casido goal as well? It was offside.
Yeah.
Like, I lost my shit. Like, and obviously, I didn't realise that was only the beginning of painful disallowed offside goals in European football that we, you know, we've experienced stuff. But like, that was. Do you know what? You absolutely nailed on the head with the saying the first time the Etihad felt, well, the City of Manchester, as it was known back then, felt like home. And it did. You're right. You just don't get many days like that in football, because obviously we go to football for days like that, don't we? You know, where you get that spine tingling atmosphere and everyone's really up for it. And most football games are relatively forgettable. You know, most are, because they're just, I don't know, a routine victory or a disappointing defeat or whatever. But some games like that are the ones that stick in your head forever, because they are the reasons that we obsess over this sport once again, because it's that sense. It's almost cathartic. It's like religious-esque, you know, when the atmosphere is like that, because everyone's just absolutely obsessed and they're hanging on every single kick of the ball. And there was a real belief as well we could do it. There was, wasn't there? And again, everyone felt we were going to do it. And obviously it wasn't to be, but it was... It did change it. It did change it. It did feel like home after that. And I guess I'll always love it for that reason.
That was a clip of this week's Patreon bonus show. It's online now for everyone who backs the podcast by £2 per month or more. And for that money, you'll also get a new bonus show every Monday as well. All the details are on patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast. Thanks very much for listening. I'll be back next week to review the game with Spurs. So I'll see you then.
Was the Blue Moon Podcast. Please support the show. Patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.